Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. For the past two decades, Barack Obama has attended Trinity United Church of Christ on Chicago's South Side. Now, in the white heat of a presidential campaign, the pastor of his black church, Reverend Jeremiah Wright, has touched off a firestorm in video of his strong voice and stronger sermons like this one from 2003.
The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God damn America. That's in the Bible for killing innocent people. God damn America for treating our citizens as less than human.
In this black church on a Sunday morning, in the context of a sermon on the south side of Chicago, that may bring amen. On YouTube or Fox News in the heat of a primary battle, it's a bombshell. Obama has distanced himself from Reverend Wright. He's speaking out on race and more today, and we will bring you that. This hour, On Point, Barack Obama, Jeremiah Wright, race, religion, and American politics right now. You can join the conversation. How do you hear the message of Jeremiah Wright? What does it mean for the candidate who wants to move beyond race? Barack Obama speaking today on race from Philadelphia, and we will listen in on that in this hour. And we'll go in a moment to a theologian and member of Barack Obama's church. But first, joining me from New York is Lisa Miller, senior editor at Newsweek, who's just back from Chicago with a close look at the church of Barack Obama and the Reverend Jeremiah A. Wright, Jr. It's written up in this week's Newsweek. Lisa, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Give us a sense of this church, its membership, and of this minister, now very recently retired. What is the country suddenly peeking in on here?
I've never seen Jeremiah Wright preach except for on video. Mm-hmm. I was at the church last weekend, and I have to tell you that it is the warmest, friendliest, least threatening place I have ever been. It's a bunch of older people, middle-aged to older people. Everybody's dressed up. Everybody's hugging and kissing and asking about their families. During a prayer time, an elderly woman who was sitting next to me asked me to pray for her health because she didn't like growing old. There is a massive disconnect between the experience of walking into that church and seeing the clips of Reverend Wright on YouTube.
And nevertheless, that's what's out there. That's what's being played again and again and again. Let's listen here. This is Reverend Wright just a few days after September 11th, 2001, putting blame at the doorstep of the United States.
We have supported state terrorism against the Palestinians and black South Africans, and now we are indignant because the stuff we have done overseas is now brought right back into our own front yards. America's chickens are coming home to roost.
And there was more. It's all over YouTube. It's all over Fox News.
We bombed Hiroshima, we bombed Nagasaki, and we nuked far more than the thousands in New York and the Pentagon, and we never batted an eye.
Lisa Miller, you've just been there. Put this in context for us.
It's hard to put this in context. Obviously, when you hear that stuff, it sounds very aggressive and very threatening, and I am not here to condone or explain hate speech. I will say that Jeremiah Wright comes from a tradition of something called Black Liberation Theology, which is a theology that emerged in the late 60s after a lot of African-American Christians felt disappointed that the promises of the Civil Rights Movement weren't better accomplished. And so Black Liberation Theology held that you could be black and proud, you could be like Malcolm X, and you could also be Christian, like Martin Luther King. And it was a way of holding both ideas in your head at the same time about being proud of your black identity and being Christian and fighting on behalf of your people. And that's the background that Jeremiah Wright comes from.
Is Trinity United Church seen as a particularly marginal church, mainstream church within its community, particular in any way, or representative of a kind of black Southside Chicago church?
We talked to 30 or so black pastors on last Friday when these clips were all over YouTube and as you say, Fox News, and we could not find a single African-American pastor or scholar who would rebuke or distance himself from Jeremiah Wright. So in one sense, he comes from a long tradition of sort of provocative, fiery rhetoric. On the south side of Chicago, where 20% of people are on welfare and 20% of people are unemployed, and the problem of racism feels very present in people's minds, there was not a lot of controversy about what Reverend Wright was saying. I think when it's being played on YouTube and when mainstream America is looking at it over and over and over again, it feels very abrasive, very threatening, very scary.
Remind us of Barack Obama's relationship with this church and this pastor.
Barack walked into this church when he was 27 years old. He came from a secular family. His mother was sort of a secular humanist, somebody we would call spiritual, not religious, read a lot of religious books, but none exclusively. He was being a community organizer on the South Side and had no real religion, and he felt, this is according to his own autobiography, that he was at a distance from the people he was trying to help because so many of the people he was trying to help were very religious. And people were saying to him, you need to find a church. He walked into this church, and he found a church home. He tries to explain it in one of his books. Hearing the stories of the Old Testament made him feel identified with the stories of slavery, that it was the African-American story. He identified with the African-American story with the Bible stories, and it was very moving to him. That's all we know. He will talk about it more later today.
He'll be speaking, of course, this morning on this from Philadelphia. Now, Barack Obama has distanced himself from Reverend Wright, who recently retired. What's the shape of that distancing, Lisa?
Well, on Friday, he was very strong, and he, you know, rebuked, condemned, distanced, spoke out against these hateful comments and said that he was never in the room when they were made, and if they had been in the room, he would have left the church. And he booted Reverend Wright off of an unofficial committee that he was on to help advise the campaign. So he's been very strong in distancing himself from Reverend Wright, but I do think that he needs to explain his relationship with the church better because he's a unifying candidate, and this is a church that is not a unifying church.
So in this church last Sunday, though, just to touch us before we let you go, did you feel you're in a hotbed of anti-Americanism or of anti-white racism?
No, not at all. As I said at the beginning of this interview, people are hugging and holding hands. I was standing in a pew with a lot, mostly women. They were all holding my hand. People were coming up and embracing me, praying for me. There was no sense that this was a place where I should be afraid. I mean, I had no sense of being afraid for a single second.
Lisa Miller, senior editor at Newsweek, joining us from New York, recently in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Here's more of the kind of tape that's being played around the country. This is Jeremiah Wright again talking about Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton.
It just came to me within the past few weeks, y'all, why so many folk are hating on Barack Obama. He doesn't fit the model. He ain't white. He ain't rich. And he ain't privileged. Hillary fits the mold. Europeans fit the mold. Giuliani fits the mold. Rich white men fit the mold. Hillary never had a cab whiz past her and not pick her up because her skin was the wrong color.
Joining me now from Chicago is Dwight Hopkins, professor of theology at the University of Chicago Divinity School and a member of Barack Obama's church, Trinity United Church of Christ. Professor Hopkins, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
What is the country getting and not getting from these clips of Pastor Jeremiah Wright that are being played all over the place now?
Right. I think we first have to establish the facts. As far as I can see, there are only two clips that are being played over and over, particularly since they were released on Thursday on ABC. One is the clip about 9/11 and the whole inference on the part of Dr. Wright that there was blowback violence. That's one tape. And the other tape is about how it is for an African-American male not to get a cab in contrast to the experience of Senator Clinton. So if I'm correct, we're looking at two sound bites from two sermons. And then I timed them, and they're each no more than 10 seconds. So we're looking at two clips of 20 seconds. And I think it's important to at least establish that fact, because my sense is that by replaying 20 seconds of two clips of two sermons over and over again, they seem to give the impression that we're talking about, you know, reams and reams of sermons. So if my facts are correct and the seconds are correct, then that's an important point.
Professor Hopkins, I have to just say there, and we'll discuss it much more, and we're so glad you're here, but I have to say, I poked around YouTube last night. I know that is far from a full cross-section of Reverend White's work and preaching, but there's a lot more than 20 seconds there. It's not all quite as incendiary as that, but there's a lot of talk about white elitism, about America as Rome, about, I mean, the tone is hardly unusual if these particular clips may be in some of their substance. Do they not represent Reverend White's view of the world?
I think we have to put it in the context of the black church. As Lisa Miller mentioned earlier when she was on, when you come to the South Side, you probably could talk. She talked of, they sample about 30 black pastors of the South Side of Chicago. Mm-hmm. She probably could expand it to maybe 100 or 200. And I'm sure you would get 99.9% of those pastors in the South Side of Chicago and probably the West Side who would not distance themselves from Reverend Wright, because the fact of the matter is they preach like that. That's part of African-American prophetic tradition.
Dwight Hopkins, please stand by in Chicago. There's much more we want to learn. Barack Obama speaking this morning, and we will listen in. Listeners, you can join us, 800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this morning about Barack Obama's fiery longtime pastor and his black church in Chicago, suddenly in the middle of the presidential campaign. Barack Obama speaking this morning in Philadelphia on race and the issues that have exploded in the last week out of video that's come out of his Trinity United Church of Christ on the South Side of Chicago of the Reverend Jeremiah Wright. Dwight Hopkins is with us. He's a theology professor at the University of Chicago Divinity School and a member of Barack Obama's church. You can join us as well, and we will go to Obama as soon as there's tape. Here's more. It's all over right now from Reverend Jeremiah Wright.
I am sick of Negroes who just do not get it. Hillary was not a black boy raised in a single-parent home. Barack was. Barack knows what it means to be a black man living in a country and a culture that is controlled by rich white people. Hillary can never know that. Hillary ain't never been called a nigger. Hillary has never had her people defined as non-person. Hillary ain't had to work twice as hard just to get accepted by the rich white folk who run everything, or to get a passing grade when you know you are smarter than that C student sitting in the White House.
Dwight Hopkins in Chicago. Give us interpretation here. I mean, this comes out of American history. It comes out of the American black church tradition, and yet it can sound, white hot fire on the ears of people who are not accustomed to this message or this style of delivery. What's the context? What's the biblical tradition this comes out of? What's the black church tradition?
Well, I think those two important parts that you've underlined, one is the biblical tradition and the other is the black church tradition. There's a long black church tradition where prophecy, prophetic discourse, social gospel movement, linking the faith to contemporary issues, churches and Christians in the pew and the black church being involved in public policy, taking on debates of the major issues of that time. These are all part of how the black church began. We have to remember that the black church began during the period of slavery. During slavery in the South, the church was an underground church. It was a secret, invisible institution. And then when 2 million African-Americans became free in around 1863, 4, or 5, they surfaced and joined primarily the Baptist and the Methodist church. So the origin of the church is underground, and the origin of the church is linked to political issues for justice and for liberation, specifically around the point of race. Race that was keeping people out of American democracy. And since that origin, there's a long tradition of linking the gospel message, as they say, with issues of race, with public policies, with debate, with controversial issues. A great example, as we know, would be Dr. Martin Luther King. And it's important for us to remember this is the 40th anniversary of his assassination on April 4th, 2008. And we may not remember, but it's important to come back to that famous speech he gave on April 4th, 1967 at Riverside Church in New York called Beyond Vietnam. And in that speech, he more or less said that I'm not talking about Mao Zedong and the Communist Party of China. I'm not talking about Fidel Castro and the Communist Party of Cuba. I'm not talking about Ho Chi Minh and the Communist Party of North Vietnam. Mm. And this is a quote. He says, "The greatest purveyor of violence in the world is my own government." And, of course, he was called exactly a terrorist. He was called a communist. He was called unpatriotic. But even Martin Luther King, who is the only American who has a national holiday just on one day, both the presidents have theirs on one day, so he is the only American that has his own, is a hero who spoke truth to power. So we have the origin of the black church,
yep,
the prophetic tradition of the black church, and then the biblical witness. And then I think this point sort of closes it out.
Yes, please.
Yeah, I think most Americans have a bubblegum view of Christianity, a candy view of Christianity. But I teach it, you know, I teach Bible, I teach religion, I teach Christianity. The Bible, particularly the Old Testament, is full of prophetic condemnation and damnation of peoples and nations and individuals.
The powers that be.
Mm-hmm. The powers that be. But it's the powers that be, if those powers that be stray away from the covenant of justice and peace that God establishes with that nation. And so when Reverend Wright says, "God damn America," if you look at the clip, he says, it's in the Bible. It's actually in the Bible. The word damn in the Old Testament means condemnation and sacred judgment.
And damning what exactly? America's not in the Bible.
It's damning a powerful country that has the resources to bring about peace, build friendship, and help the poor. Instead, it's gone to war and occupying a smaller nation. And
do,
so,
do you think this is a bridgeable scenario here? Barack Obama presents himself as a man, has presented himself as a man, moving beyond traditional American racial divides and the cultural divides that come with them. Is this more than the country can take on board, having this kind of, you know, inside the black church turned outside on YouTube, Fox News, you name it? Do you think that Barack Obama can both live in that community and lead this diverse nation politically? Does that work?
Yes, I think he has the opportunity, and, you know, we'll hear from his major speeches today and in the coming days on the issues of race, politics, and unifying the country. Being a part of Trinity United Church of Christ means that one is part of American Christianity. See, I think that's part of the disconnect. There seems to be a perspective on what is the correct way to be an American Christian. Does it mean to be patriotic? Does it mean to be calm? Does it mean to just give a three-point sermon and everybody clap and sit down? That's a very important way of being an American Christian. But the problem, I think, that people are shocked. They're shocked because they think they need to define American Christianity as they think it should be defined. And this has been a historic debate in Christianity. There were certain mainstream Christians who felt that to be a Christian was to own slaves. There were some who felt mainstream Christianity who felt that there should be segregation. And now I think that there is a debate over what is correct Christianity and what's the language of it, what's the tone of it. That's a huge debate. Mm. Now, of course, the reason that we're having the debate is not so much because most of America or the media are concerned about Reverend Wright's sermons or Trinity United Church of Christ. The only reason that we're talking about this issue is because it's been made political. A church has been made political. If Senator Obama was not a member of Trinity, we wouldn't be talking about Reverend Wright.
A member of Trinity. He's very, very possibly nominee for the presidency of the United States. Dwight Hopkins in Chicago, we're so glad to have you. Please stand by there for a moment. I want to turn to Washington for a political perspective for a moment here, because this is as hot as it gets in politics. Karen Tumulty joins us. She's Time Magazine's national political correspondent. Karen, thanks very much for joining us.
Well, good morning.
Hi.
So we're all sitting here on the edges of our chairs waiting for this speech to begin. But there is, in fact, an embargoed copy of the speech that has already been circulated among reporters. And because of the embargo, I can't say what's in it, but it is a very powerful and very complicated speech, I must say.
Karen, how high are the stakes for Barack Obama in the wake of this video sort of spilling into the center of the primary discourse?
They are absolutely huge. At this point, I think that whether this is just, you know, whether it's a distortion of Reverend Wright's views or an accurate portrayal, unquestionably, it is exactly contrary to the message that Barack Obama has himself been running on. So he really does, I think, particularly with swing voters, with independent voters, have to reconcile those two things.
No, Christianity is a challenging religion. Just open the Bible and it's there for anyone sitting in wealth and power. Does Barack Obama now have to become some kind of theologian in chief to present that at the same time he's presenting a political message?
No, and this is not a religious speech, by the way. This is much more a speech that deals with, because, you know, Reverend Wright was not only his spiritual advisor, but he was also very important in kind of introducing Barack Obama to his own blackness,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, he had grown up in a largely white world. And he had been a connection for Barack Obama to the African American community in Chicago. I mean, don't forget that Barack Obama not only grew up in a white world, but he really didn't have the connection to slavery and a lot of the other things that are you know, common to the black American experience.
But he was married in this church. His children were baptized in this church.
Exactly.
He named his autobiography, The Audacity of Hope, with a phrase from this pastor.
And it was this pastor who was very much a bridge in his life to the African American experience. And really that is what he is going to do in this speech, is to really kind of put that experience in context for white Americans, and I think to both denounce what Reverend Wright said, but also to try to explain it. And I think that's a very, very high bar for this speech, but this is what he tries to do.
Well, Karen, when you hear Dwight Hopkins, professor of theology, member of this church, say, look, within this context, here's how this makes sense. Now Barack Obama has to deal with it in a full national context. He's a gifted communicator. But even now in 2008, is this more than the American body politic can take on board, this much self-awareness of all the diversity within its perspectives, within its racial outlooks?
It is a lot to handle, and it is a lot for a political candidate to take on his own two shoulders, especially in a culture and a climate where communication is being done in, you know, little snippets on TV and little videos on YouTube. You know, a long and complicated discussion of a long and complicated and painful issue is a lot to ask in you know, what politics has become.
Dwight Hopkins, a key issue that's come out here is Barack Obama saying, I didn't hear this. If I had, I would have renounced it. I would have been out of there at the time. I wasn't there when he said this or that. I think a lot of Americans see these bits, let's say on YouTube, and it doesn't look like a man who's speaking. You know, Pastor Wright looks like a man in the fullness of his powers, speaking as he would normally speak, giving a message that's familiar to both him and his congregation. Can it be that Barack Obama really misunderstood this man, or is it just that it's hard to understand him looking in from the outside?
Yeah, I think there's another important question. First of all, I think there might be a presupposition that every sermon for the last 36 years at Trinity was characterized by what we've been seeing on YouTube, mm-hmm. those 10, 15 seconds.
So I have to say again, it is more than 10 or 15 seconds.
The other thing is that most people go to church on Sunday, 4 Sundays out of the month. But I can understand how Senator Obama was in the state legislature in Springfield and Chicago. Then he was in the Senate in Washington, D.C. and on the road. And then, of course, the last 18 to 19 months, he's been on the road campaigning for the president of the United States. So there are quite that. Trinity has a lot of professionals in the church, people who are consulting around the country, professors like myself who's on the road a lot of weekends speaking and giving lectures and at committee meetings. So I think for that small grouping of professionals in the church whose jobs and professions call them to be on the road, it's understandable that the particular sermons in question that he refers to, he wasn't there.
So simply not there. Karen, what do you say?
One thing that is significant in this speech, however, is that while, you know, he does not say that he heard these words, he does not deny that over the course of the years he has heard these sentiments. And, you know, what he tries to explain in the speech is kind of the two you know, trying to sort of translate these sentiments and explain to people that, you know, there's a lot of anger in the black community, there's a lot of anger in the white community that often is just not expressed in, you know, outside the barber shops and the dining room tables and, yes, the churches, which, as has often been noted, you know, the most segregated hour in America comes on Sunday morning.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Let's get a quick call here from Pam calling from Davenport, Iowa. Pam, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to simply say I've had the privilege of hearing Dr. Wright a couple of times preach, and I still remember to this day a sermon I heard from him about 10 years ago that spoke about the transformational power of God, and it was an incredible sermon and a great experience, and I have respect for the fact that he built up this congregation that was dying, I think, to be one of the largest United Church of Christ denominations, if not the largest in the United States.
Did you hear an angry, dangerous message or a tough love message? What did you hear, Pam?
What I heard, I remember distinctly he told a story about hope and about God's ability to not let us down, and told a story about a group of people going through a museum looking at paintings, and they came to a particular painting called Checkmate, where it looked like the devil was one of the players, and that the devil had the opposition who was supposed to be portrayed by the divine in Checkmate. And one of the people of the group looked at this painting as everybody else went on, and you hear this echo from down the hall saying, "It's a lie. The king has another move." And I can still hear Jeremiah Wright saying that and helping us who were there understand that that for God, there is always another move.
Pam, thank you very much for that. I want to bring one more voice into this conversation, if I may. Joining us from Washington is Clarence Page, nationally syndicated Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for the Chicago Tribune. Clarence, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
You've got a long view here as an African-American and Chicagoan and national political observer. Describe the situation you see Barack Obama in as the country sort of looks into his church in this particular way, Clarence.
Well, this was like deja vu all over again for me, because it reminds me so much of when Harold Washington ran in Chicago as the first black mayor. Eventually, once he won, we went through the same kind of differences here, where the debate went way beyond the political into black-white culture in a very divided city. So I'm reminded that Reverend Wright's church, which I have attended, first time was there for a wedding of some friends of mine, and a racially integrated crowd, quite different from the portrayal of a den of black nationalism that you hear on Fox News and some other places these days. And I was immediately impressed by the preacher. I said, "Who is that man?" Because he had a great way of mixing thought-provoking a sermon with that old-time religion, and in a way that did build up the church. Most impressive to me, lots of families, including young families, young black men who are so often missing from the black church that I saw being attracted here. And that's part of the reason for this very muscular social theology.
But is this more than the whole country can swallow? Clarence Page.
Well, you know, this was inevitable that this dialogue was going to happen. Mm-hmm. I said so when Barack Obama first announced, because of the fact that race is always beneath the surface of our social and political discourse in this country, economic too, for that matter. Once in a while, things happen that cause it to burst through, like the Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill hearings, and various other times in our history, with Tawana Brawley, et cetera, et cetera. And this is one of those occasions, and it's in the midst of the arena of a national presidential election.
Mm. Clarence Page, Dwight Hopkins, Karen Templety, please stand by. Barack Obama speaking this morning in Philadelphia. We'll listen in. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Join us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Barack Obama's fiery longtime pastor and his black church in Chicago, suddenly in the middle of the presidential campaign. We're joined by Dwight Hopkins from the University of Chicago Divinity School, theology professor there, also a member of Trinity United Church of Christ in Chicago, on the South Side, where Dr. Jeremiah Wright Jr. was preacher, Barack Obama's preacher, for many years. Karen Tumulty, Time Magazine's national political correspondent, joins us from Washington, as does Clarence Page, Chicago Tribune columnist, nationally syndicated columnist. You can join the conversation. What do you think? Do all Christians have to find a path between the Bible's tough messages on worldly power and the realities of superpower life? And is a black minister entitled to a special fervor on issues of social justice, obligated to lift them, or, in this case, over the line? We're at 1-800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Barack Obama speaking in Philadelphia this morning. The whole country looking forward to hearing that message, and it is supposed to be a big one on race. Reverend Wright, speaking truth to power, tough not just on white elites at points, but also on black figures in power. Here he is with reference to Clarence Thomas, Colin Powell, and Condoleezza Rice.
I can't be a Supreme Court judge named Long Dong Silver who disrespects black women and himself. I got to be me. I can't be a lying five-star general who leads an entire nation into war on a lie. And I can't be a Secretary of State who goes shopping on Broadway while blacks are drowning in New Orleans. I got to be me.
And the pastor, not the least bit afraid to look at American history with a very critical eye.
I forgive you, confused journalists. I forgive you, nervous Negroes. I forgive you. He set me free to forgive stupidity. And he set me free to praise God in spite of an oppressive government. Our government has been oppressing folks since we stole this country from the Comanche.
Dwight Hopkins, a preacher, also a patriot, something else. How do you interpret that?
Yeah, I think very powerful clips that Chin, somewhat humorous as well. Again, the debate on preaching and patriotism, I think, is key, too. See, part of the issue is how do we define patriotism and who makes the final say. Mm. Is a patriot one who simply goes along with what the government says, even if it's a good government or a bad government? Or is a person who is a true patriot is someone who loves the country so much that they would serve the country as an honorable Marine, which Dr. Wright did, and also critique the country? See, the point of the black church tradition and the preaching that Reverend Wright, he sits in that context, is to challenge the nation, if not even judge and condemn the nation, in order to bring it back to the best tradition and the future that God has for it. And what we see is we see that slither of the challenge. We don't see the end of the sermon where they talk about Jesus and their celebration and there's talk about reconciliation. Mm-hmm. Patriotism, to me, are those people who fought against unjust war, who fought against slavery, who took up arms against the British, you know, no representation, no taxation. Those are the patriots of America. There's also a form of patriotism where we don't need fiery rhetoric and we need a more reconciliatory period. But patriotism can be broadly defined. And the passion of Dr. Wright and the other black clergy, particularly on the South Side, who speak this language, is because they love America. They want America to be true to the ideals. They really do want to see this dream of Dr. King's.
Mm. Karen Tumulty, is this country ready for the prophetic tradition to be pulled out into the middle of politics? Are Americans prepared to see that kind of hypercritical prophetic critique of power, of life, of wealth in the middle of a political campaign where patriotism is seen as also all important?
Yeah, I think that is going to be, you know, a hard sell when the internet can, you know, spread, well, you know, does he or doesn't he put his hand over his heart during the national anthem? I think this is a very complicated message. It's a message that has a lot of, cross currents in it. And it is Barack Obama is a candidate of extraordinary gifts when it comes to communications, but I think this is going to test all of them.
Let's go to Marlene in Buffalo, New York. Marlene, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
First, I'd like to say that I do not think that Obama should be responsible for the words and views of Dr. Reverend Wright, no more than John McCain should be responsible for the words and views of Jerry Falwell or the minister who called the Catholic religion something like the Great Whore.
This is John Hagee in San Antonio who's endorsed McCain, but then McCain didn't sit in his church for 20 years, Marlene.
I still don't think that he should be responsible or have to explain why a minister said what he said. And I do think it's a really sad that we are taking a few excerpts from a man's 36-year career, and he's been known to be a superb speaker as well as ministers, as well as a minister. And I also think it's sad that we're playing these excerpts because I do think that they're playing upon the fears that a lot of people have out there. And it goes right along with saying that he's a Muslim, which apparently he is not. And so now if he's not a Muslim, he's a Christian, but he doesn't go to the right church with the right message. And I do think that's a shame. I'm not a Christian. I don't go to church. But I tell you what, from what I've been hearing with Reverend Wright, if I did go to church, I'd go to his church because I agree with his messages that he's that have been out there so far. I don't have a problem with a thing that he has said.
Marlene,
at this point.
Marlene, we've got it. We appreciate your call. Clarence Page, what about the media's role here? I mean, these days, everything gets rolled onto YouTube, you name it. It ends up on TV. It ends up in snips on TV.
Right.
Is that fair? Not? Inevitable? How do you read it?
Well, in Chicago, we have an old expression, politics ain't beanbag, and Barack is very familiar with it. And what strikes me, Tom, speaking of media, is, you know, I've been a student and a fan of political movies, back to Mr. Smith Goes to Washington and right down the line. And, you know, there's one thing that is typical in the genre of the political movie, and that is the big speech. There's a big speech at the end that brings everybody together.
Wraps it all up.
That's a big point. And the irony here is Barack Obama's national political career began with a big speech on the stage that was riveting and unprecedented in many ways. And now his political future is pivoting on this big speech. And so, you know, how do you deal with this new media age? Well, you deal with it with leadership. And that's what we pick presidents for. And campaigns are supposed to be a debate about the future, and that's what we've got going right now.
Clarence, I have to ask you, though, I mean, in some ways, as Dwight Hopkins and you both pointed out, Barack Obama came into this church looking for his identity, his racial identity. He came out grounded in this community on the south side of Chicago. I have seen, in a way, it looks to me almost like a gift of the black community to the rest of the country, which is many people have been very excited about the image of redemption or reconciliation embodied Barack Obama, a kind of gift in themselves accepting this man who came from a very mixed racial background saying, all right, he can be our torchbearer. If this is batted down and said, we can't hear this, Clarence, is it a rejection in a way of an offering from the black community to the country?
In some ways it is, and Barack Obama met Reverend Wright as a community organizer. He went around different churches trying to pull them into voter registration and these other movements, and Wright said, you know, your message would come across a lot better if you had a church home yourself. The ministers want to know, where are you coming from? And all. And really, it was through community organizing and all that that Barack Obama came to the church, and it certainly, you're absolutely right. If you're going to bridge the red state, blue state, et cetera, America, as in the Barack Obama vision, then you must get out there and learn these different communities. Barack kind of did it backwards compared to most black Americans in that he learned the black community second, as Karen Tumulty mentioned earlier. So this is now the big speech has to teach this message to the rest of the country. You know, you want to get to this colorblind America. Here is the pathway.
Let's go to Marion calling from Newton, Massachusetts. Marion, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. This is extremely hypocritical. We all know that if there were a white candidate preacher, even in a 10-second soundbite about an anti-African American statement, that candidate would be out of the campaign. That would be it. It would be over. There would be nobody saying it was only 10 seconds. There'd be nobody saying, well, the white supremacists were nice and they hugged me when I came. He would be out of the campaign. And what happens over and over again is that there are people who are for civil rights, but then they receive racism in return. If the African American community really wants to be concerned about racism, they have to make sure that they're not racist against whites, they're not racist against Jews. When I was in college, the African American club had Farrakhan come, even though he was saying he was calling very anti-Semitic statements, and they wouldn't listen to the Jewish Law Society that said that this was offensive, and this happens time and time again.
Marion, does it matter? Does it matter in this dialogue, in this religious consideration, in this church, that whites owned slaves and blacks were slaves?
No. I mean, basically what he is saying, no, because what he's saying is anti-American, anti-Israel, this preacher is spreading hate. And for Barack Obama to say that he didn't hear these statements when he has spent 20 years with this preacher, he has spent 20 years being influenced by somebody who is spreading hate.
Marion, thank you very much for your call. Our time is short, but I want to get that to Dwight Hopkins. Professor Hopkins, what do you say?
Well, first of all, we have to agree with the caller that no one should propagate or speak or write about hate. It's against the American way. It's also against Christianity. But I do think there's a difference. Let's just say this. I think that it's still this issue. What is anti-American? I think it was Marianne. She used the word that Dr. Wright was preaching, anti-Americanism. And again, it comes down to who defines what it means to be an American. Does it mean that the Bible justifies everything that the U.S. government does? In some cases, when it abolished slavery, when it fought for integration, when they passed civil rights law, that does correspond with the Bible. So we have to affirm the positive history. But at the same time, when someone critiques his or her own government, to me, that's the highest form of patriotism.
Do you see racism in the remarks of Jeremiah Wright? Do you see him spreading hate?
I don't see him spreading hate, and I don't see him using a racism. I think he puts forth very provocative Old Testament Bible-based sermons that awaken people who are in slumber. Slumber being they think that the Bible justifies everything that the U.S. government does, everything that we do as individuals. Again, the issue of patriotism, the issue of Bible, all these things are used, it seems to me, in various sermons that Wright uses. They just seem very, if we come in on a slice of the sermon, or if we come into the church not knowing the history of the African-American preachers like Martin Luther King, it can seem very shocking and very different indeed.
Clarence Page, is it fair, is it necessary, as Marion says, to turn it around and say, well, if there were a white candidate associated with such this kind of racially toned views from the other side of the race line, he'd be out in a second?
Well, Ronald Reagan and others in the past have been associated with such views, but it doesn't have the same resonance when you're talking about this being a white majority country. And let me take issue with the notion that even in those most inflammatory sound bites of rights, I did not hear him ever speak in terms of black supremacy. That, to me, would be racism. But he does not. He talks about what has been done to black folks. And you can complain legitimately that maybe he plays the victim card too much. Maybe that's a flaw. But he doesn't say that, you know, black folks are better than white folks. I think, you know, we get so loose with these words like racism and sexism and all. He doesn't give hate speech. It is about anger. And I love to hear Dwight Hopkins speak to the cathartic tradition black church. And the need to express a fear and the suspicions, et cetera.
Clarence Page, Karen Tumulty, Dwight Hopkins, we're not going to get a lot of Barack Obama, but let's hear the beginning of his speech in Philadelphia.
Thanking
one moment.
Harris Wofford for his contributions to this country in so many different ways. He exemplifies what we mean by the word citizen. And so we are very grateful to him for all the work he has done, and I'm thankful for the gracious and thoughtful introduction.
Harris Wofford, the senator who just introduced
We the People,
Barack Obama.
In order to form a more perfect union, 221 years ago, in a hall that still stands across the street, a group of men gathered and with these simple words launched America's improbable experiment in democracy. Farmers and scholars, statesmen and patriots who had traveled across the ocean to escape tyranny and persecution, finally made real their Declaration of Independence at a Philadelphia convention that lasted through the spring of 1787. The document they produced was eventually signed, but ultimately unfinished. It was stained by this nation's original sin of slavery, a question that divided the colonies and brought the convention to a stalemate until the founders chose to allow the slave trade to continue for at least 20 more years. and to leave any final resolution to future generations. Of course, the answer to the slavery question was already embedded within our Constitution, a Constitution that had at its very core the ideal of equal citizenship under the law, a Constitution that promised its people liberty and justice, and a union that could be and should be perfected over time. And yet words on a parchment would not be enough to deliver slaves from bondage or provide men and women of every color and creed their full rights and obligations as citizens of the United States. What would be needed were Americans in successive generations who were willing to do their part through protests and struggles on the streets and in the courts, through a civil war and civil disobedience, and always at great risk, to narrow that gap between the promise of our ideals and the reality of their time. This was one of the tasks we set forth at the beginning of this presidential campaign, to continue the long march of those who came before us, a march for a more just, more equal, more free, more caring, and more prosperous America. I chose to run for president at this moment in history because I believe deeply that we cannot solve the challenges of our time unless we solve them together.
Barack Obama speaking this morning in a historic speech in Philadelphia. We'll have the full speech at our website, onpointradio.org. Dwight Hopkins in Chicago, Clarence Page, and Karen Tumulty of Time Magazine in Washington, D.C. We're grateful to both of you for being with us today. Full speech, as I say, at our website, onpointradio.org. Thank you to all of our callers. You can continue this conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.